second of tonight's speakers, who's Sarah.
Oh, my name's Sarah, an addict.
Hi, Sarah.
First of all, I've got to get used to speaking to a microphone. So, anyway. Yeah, it's great to be here. Where shall I start? I'll put things into context a bit. Okay, I've been coming to these meetings now for 28 years. I'm 28 years clean. Thank you. Thank you. I'm 55 years old and I'm going to be married for 20 years in January. I've got two kids, 16 and 19, both born in recovery. So I'm telling you all this because this program works, okay? And it works because I do what it says on the tin. Those people who keep coming to our meetings regularly stay clean, okay? And that's what I've done. So how did I get here? I picked up my first drink and drug when I was about 15. I never felt like I fitted in, ever. Okay, I'm an only child. My father died when I was 7. And I, you know, it took me a lot of recovery and a lot of steps to work through all that. But, you know, my first memory really is of seven, being told, you've got to grow up, be a good girl and look after your mum. Okay, and that was kind of like the default. And, you know, right the way through at school, growing up, I didn't feel like I fitted in because I go back to other kids' houses and they'd have a mum and a dad and brothers and sisters and they'd all be sitting around the kitchen table having tea and, you know, all that kind of normal stuff. And I was the kid with the key around my neck and I'd come back from school and I'd let myself in and I'd wait for my mum to come back from work and, you know. And that's not to say, you know, I'm not saying that's a kind of sob story. That was how it was. But I just didn't feel like, you know, everyone else. And, you know, my mother was a revolving door of looking for another husband. So, you know, there I was at 11, 12, while she was sitting on the sofa, sobbing her eyes out to some Frank Sinatra as another guy left her, and I'm handing her the Kleenex, saying, don't worry, Mum, it'll be okay. And I thought all that was quite normal. You know, I didn't really have an issue with it. Because that's, you know, that was what I knew. So, you know, go to school. You know, I want to fit in. I want to be with the cool crowd. I want to sit in the back of the class. You know, cause a bit of a, you know, bit of an issue. I suppose I'm about 14, 15. And I can't really remember how, you know, I picked up my first drug. But it was, my first drug was... I think alcohol, dope. I remember taking speed and loving it. I loved it. I loved how it made me feel because suddenly I felt like I belonged. I had a group that I could belong to. I left school at 16. I couldn't be doing with all that. And my, you know, I was pretty out of control. My mother had no idea how to kind of, you know, keep me under control. Tell me what to do. As soon as she tried to tell me what to do, I would tell her where to go. Got a job, did a secretarial course, got a job. So there I am, I'm 16, I think I know it all, okay? I'm working not that far from here at the BBC up in Portland Place as a secretary, okay? And I'm going to the pub at night, buying speed, taking speed, thinking this is fantastic because it gets me through work. I mean, straight away, addict mentality. This is really good. I'm not going to just do it at the weekend. I'm going to do it all the time. So, you know, there I am. I think, you know, I really think at sort of 16, 17, 18, I just have it all, okay? I must have been pretty unbearable. Anyway, what can I say? You know, at that stage, it was still fun. To be honest, it was. Having said that, I'm sitting here and I can remember at 16 going away with a girlfriend to Amsterdam, and that was when I had my first alcoholic blackout, and that was when I woke up in a youth hostel. I had no idea how I got there. I was covered in bruises. I had no money left, and apparently I'd been carried kicking and screaming to the back of a police van. Now, that did not set any alarm bells. I didn't think, oh my God, that's awful. I should really get my act together. All those feelings of shame and like, oh, you know, I just ignored them. I just pushed them down. I had another joint. I had another drink. And I just wanted to party. So there I am, trucking along. Okay, so we'll kind of fast forward a bit. You know, I did lots of acid. I went to festivals. I did the whole, you know, Glastonbury, Stonehenge. I thought it was also kind of cool. And, you know, I tell you what's really interesting, actually. There's still some music I cannot listen to. Okay, I did a lot of heavy duty using to the Doors. Okay, because I ended up sticking, you know, as a junkie, fixing hex, fixing smack, and still, even now, I can't listen to some Doors tracks without getting that taste in the back of my throat. Okay, and that's after 28 years. Now that tells you, okay, that this is a powerful thing, addiction. So anyway. You know, the disease progressed and, you know, basically I ended up at, I can't remember how old I was, 26, 27, 28, something like that. I ended up, you know, in a flat in Shepherd's Bush. And the best way I can describe the end of my using is trying to score a £10 bag with £9.50. Okay? I mean, you know, pretty sordid. And in between, that sort of girl at 16, 17 who thought, you know, this is so cool and I'm like, you know, just, you know, it's all so wonderful, ended up, you know, miserable. And everything that they say in the literature, you know, I live to use and use to live. And I didn't know what to do, you know. I was quite a high-functioning addict in that I had it kind of sussed, in my sick mind I had it sussed, because I ended up using gear. I would wake up in the morning, I'd have a hit, just enough to normalise me, to get me into work. Then, you know, by that time I was working in advertising as a sort of PA. And in those days, you know, there was a lot of drink, there was a lot of coke, so any kind of apparent weird behaviour kind of was acceptable. Kind of get through the day, and then I'd spend the whole evening trying to score enough gear for the next morning. Very occasionally I'd have to leave work at lunchtime and go and try and score and come up with some, you know, excuse about whatever. And that was my life, you know. And in between, there was lots of miserable, dismal, awful relationships, you know, where I would wake up in the morning and I'd be in some flat. I had no idea who was next to me, how I got there, you know, whatever. And all those feelings of kind of shame and just, you know, I would just use them. Didn't want to feel them, pushed it down. So there I am, you know, in this flat in Shepherd's Bush, fishing my dirty works out of cat litter and rinsing them out, you know, really nice, you know, trying to score with not much money. And I was living with this guy, and a friend of his, who is amazingly still in the rooms, came around to see us, and she told us there was this thing called Narcotics Anonymous, NA, and you go to meetings, and you don't have to use. And I thought, okay, well, I get the sticking a needle in your arm isn't such a good idea. I could get that, but not smoking dope and not drinking and not taking your pill, I was really not too sure about that. But anyway, so she took us to a meeting, and it was not dissimilar to this, actually. And up there with the 12 steps, okay, and I sat at the back, and I was sick, I mean sick, and it was... I can still remember it. It was kind of, it must have been after New Year's Eve, because everyone was all kind of bright and shiny and showing how they had the most wonderful New Year's Eve, because they'd obviously been at some NA party, and how great it was to bring the new year in clean and everything. And I sat there looking at these steps and traditions, listening to these people who, of course, look like I do, which is not like a using addict. And I was sitting there, you know, with a pale face and the eyes, you know, kind of like stones and kind of thin and dirty and grimy. And I heard all the differences. And I thought, this is not for me. This is, and someone gave me a leaflet, am I an addict? And I walked out and I looked down and I ticked all the boxes and I thought, yeah, I am an addict. Great, I can go and use some more. Okay, so that was my justification. I used for about another year. And anyway, I ended up, the guy I was living with, he ended up going to a treatment centre. I ended up going down to visit him. Same kind of little scenario as when I was at work. I'd have a little hit, not enough to really nod out, just enough to kind of normalise me, go down. Because I was very good at putting on a front, you know, really good at putting on a front. Because, you know, for me, a lot of my addiction thing that I have to, you know, deal with in recovery, it's all about control. Okay, so I want to sit here and I don't want to let you in. I don't want to let you know what's going on inside. Okay, so I'm going to be very controlled. And that was how I was when I was using. So, anyway, of course, they, you know, all came out down there that his girlfriend was a using addict. So, you know, on one visit down there, they beckoned me into the office and give me another form, you know, to answer all these questions. Tick, tick, tick. Yes, I am an addict. So they say, well, you've got a drug problem. We think you need some help, but I can't. I've got two cats at home, you know. And actually, I have to say, at this point, I needed someone to say to me, you need help. I did not have it in me to say, I can't do this anymore. Okay, I mean, sick and tired of being sick and tired. Okay, but I did not know how to stop. Anyway. Long story short, so I go into this treatment centre and, you know, I detox and all that kind of stuff. That was the 14th of October 1984. So I detox and everything and it's all pretty grim. And in those days, you know, there's so many different treatment centres now. Okay, when I got clean, I mean, nowadays you can pick up any magazine and there's always somebody who's, you know, popped out the, you know, and said, oh, I've got a problem and, you know, I'm clean now. 28, 29 years ago, there was no such, you know, it wasn't like that. And, you know, treatment centres then were pretty hard line. You know, you'd sit in a group and I was told, you are a dirty, disgusting little junkie, okay? Great, you know, just shame me into submission. And if you don't, you know, if you don't work the steps, okay, you will use and die. Okay, if you don't get up in the morning and read your Just for Today, you will use and die. You know, oh, God. So for me, you know, that just plugged into all my kind of, you know, stuff. And I was in this treatment centre two months and I came out and I lived in the West Country in Bristol. And I was rigid, rigid. Okay, now maybe that was a good thing, I don't know. But I really was convinced that if I did not get up in the morning, make my bed, you know, sit down, read my Just for the Day, make a phone call, go to a meeting, that, you know, something would happen, you know. And I have to say now, you know, it's only a few years down the line that I can say that I realise, you know, a relapse does not happen. It's not like I'm walking down the street and suddenly a works falls into my arm or a joint comes into my finger or something. A relapse, picking up, is the end of a series of a lot of different behaviour that leads you to that point. Okay, but I didn't know that then. Anyway, so, you know, for those people who are sort of, you know, new around during the first sort of, you know, months or, you know, first year of recovery, you know, what I did is I got a commitment, okay? Service saved my life. Okay, it sounds corny, but I got a tea commitment, I got a literature commitment. And what that did for me, first of all, is it gave me a purpose to be at a meeting, okay? So I could go to the meeting. Secondly, okay, because now, don't forget, I've come out of this treatment centre, all right, I've no drink and drugs, so I have no idea, how do you communicate with people? How do you have relationships with people? Okay, because before I was always stoned, okay? I felt like the hole, you know, you've heard, I'm sure you've all heard this before, I felt like the hole in the middle of the donut. I mean, I felt like a jelly. And so getting a commitment at a meeting, what that did for me is it meant I could go to the meeting and I could be busy, gave me a purpose, and it gave me some kind of something to, some way in of like talking to people and a way of kind of connecting with people rather than just walking in and standing there like a lemon, you know. So, you know, I got a commitment and yeah, that was kind of how, that was how it all started. You know, why did I, you know, let's look at this, you know, as the speaker said before, you know, this is a disease of addiction, and it's cunning, baffling and powerful, and it's out to get me. And the reason that I picked up drink and drugs in the first place is I couldn't deal with me and I couldn't deal with how I felt. So when I put down all the, when I put down all the substances, I was then left with a bunch of feelings. And people used to say to me, you know, how are you feeling, Sarah? And I'd say, oh, I've got a pain in my knee, or, you know, I'm really tired. I had no idea what a feeling was. Absolutely no idea. So, of course, you know, getting clean and in recovery, you know, you start to thaw out. And I would sit in meetings and I'd hear people share and I'd be like, oh, my God, you know, I felt all this kind of stuff, you know, in my stomach. And I realised I was really angry. You know, why was I, you know, what was I angry about? I was just angry. I was just raging. I was furious. I was furious with being an addict. I was furious with my mother. I blamed everyone. Just, you know, that first kind of initial thing when the drink and drugs were left, I was just left with all this stuff. Because I really believe, for me, that what happens was when I picked up, everything that I was feeling just had a lid on it. So then when you stop taking the you know, when I got clean, you take the lid off, and all that stuff is still there, you know. So that's what it was like. Now, you know, I've worked a lot of steps, and I've come to terms with a lot of what went on when I was growing up and how my mother was. But I have to say, I was brought up by someone who wrote the book on being a victim and being a martyr. I mean, she really did. So, of course, you know, when I got clean, you know, I was like, well, of course, it's not my fault, you know, and if, you know, this, you know, I really had to work through that a lot and really sort of, you know, come to terms with that. Anyway, so how do I now encapsulate, you know, what I've been doing the last 28 years? Got clean and I thought, I know, it'd be a really good idea, I'm going to get some A-levels. So I went to college, and I did my A-levels because I left school at 16, and I got a grant for them because I wrote to the local council and told them I'd messed up when I was at school, and it was my right to do my A-levels, and I got a letter from my treatment centre and a letter from my counsellor, and I got, I mean, it was, you know, I don't know, 10 quid a week or something, but the point was, I did it, okay, because I really felt strongly about this. And I thought, I know, you know, I'm going to do a degree. So I did my A-levels, okay, and then, I got 2 A-levels in a year. And then I moved back down to London, and I got a place at London University to do a degree. Now, you know, all that obsessive compulsive energy that I had as a using addict, I then proceeded to channel into my recovering, into doing this degree, okay? And it was great, actually. It was hard, you know. There I was at university, and I'm 30, 32 years old, and I'm at university with all these kind of 18, 19-year-olds, and they're all, you know, going off to the student union bar and vomiting behind a bush. Okay, and now I've been, you know, been there, seen it, done it, got the T-shirt, have no desire to do that. And it was hard, you know. And it took me a long time in my recovery to realise that, you know, when people say, how are you, I don't have to really tell them how I am feeling, right down to the last thing. also, when people say, oh, you don't drink, I don't actually have to then tell them exactly that, you know, I used to drink to excess and I used to, you know, take drugs and blah, blah, blah. You know, it took me quite a while to kind of figure that out. But being at university and doing my degree was a real eye-opener, okay? And the reason it was an eye-opener is step one says we admitted we were powerless over our addiction. Okay, that's one of the things I love about NA, is we admitted we were powerless over drugs or any specific drugs, but our addiction. So, of course, I'm an addict in recovery and I've put down the drink and the drugs, and what do I replace it with? Studying, work. My God, you know, suddenly it was like, you know, I was like a woman possessed, you know. I would get the reading list, I'd read all the books on the reading list, and in the books there would be a footnote, and I'd read the books in the footnote. I must have been a pain in the neck, because I was always the one sitting at the front going, oh, excuse me, you know, they must have all hated me. But, you know, it was actually, I mean, I say all this, and it is quite funny, but actually, you know what, at the time it was quite painful. Okay, because I was driven by fear. I was so scared I was going to fail. I was so frightened I was going to fail. I was so frightened I was going to get found out. Okay, I mean, you know, there's still a part of me here. They're going to find out. Okay, they're going to find out. But, you know, I don't know, what are you going to find out? But there is that, they're going to find out. You know, when I used to go and pick my daughters up from school, primary school, and I stand at the school gate, and there I am, you know, I'm a kind of normal-looking woman, I'm waiting to pick up my 5-year-old, 6-year-old, and I stand there, I look at all these other mothers, and I think, they know, okay? They know that, you know, this front is not really real. They're going to find out, you know. So that was what it was like at university. I thought they were all going to find out that I was a complete fraud and that I was going to fail. It was all going to be a dismal failure. Anyway, I got my degree, which was great. And I had, you know, I have to talk, you know, digress, you know, I have a higher power, okay? Step two, you know, is insanity, and step three, you know, I handed my life and my will over. I found it really hard at the beginning, this whole concept of a higher power, this whole concept of faith. You know, I mean, I got clean and people said to me, you know, hand it over, have faith. Have faith in what? What are you asking me to have faith in? I don't even know if this thing works. So I had that kind of blind faith. And, you know, my higher power, and still to a sense today, is not so much a kind of God up there, because, you know, the God up there is what I was told by the minister when I was 7, that your father's died and he's gone up and sitting on a cloud with Jesus. So that doesn't sit too well with me. Now my higher power really is, it's all, you know, it's the meeting, it's the programme, it's NA. Okay, it's a power outside of me. Okay, that I have faith in, that I trust in. So, you know, when I was doing my finals, and I was seeing this hall, you know, after 3 years working in this hall, you've got candidate number, and I'm writing like crazy about Greek tragedy and Roman comedy and Shakespeare and God knows what. And I had one of those amazing moments. I looked around and I thought, oh my God, I'm a recovering heroin addict, and I'm sitting here, and I'm writing an exam, and I'm going to get a degree, hopefully. That is amazing. Just one of those real moments of connection. You know, and I've had those through, you know, from time to time in recovery, because it's very easy. You know, they say that this is a bridge to normal living. Okay, and, you know, I have to say, you know, I sit here and I've been around a few years, and it's great. There's somebody in this room that I used to score drugs off, and they're clean in recovery today. That's amazing. There's a couple of other people that I know from, you know, when I got clean. There are a hell of a lot of people who are not, okay, that are not around, okay? They're just not. Now, what's happened to them? Maybe they've gone out and used, maybe they're back out there. Some people, you know, and I... you know, I can't judge because this is my program and this is how it works for me. Some people, you know, they cross that bridge to normal living and they have a normal life and they think, I've got a normal life, I can drink normally. Okay? Maybe that works for them. I don't want to risk it. Okay? I absolutely don't want to risk it. So to a certain extent, for me, this is, you know, I have a house and a husband and a dog and a mortgage and kids and that kind of stuff. So, you know, on the outside, I look like I've crossed that bridge to normal living. But inside, you know, I have a brain which, when I walk out of this room tonight after I've done this chair and I go home to my house in Wimbledon, I will sit on the train and I will think about all the things I didn't say, that I should have said, okay? And I will beat myself up, okay? Because I've got, that's the illness, okay? And the reason why I have to keep coming to these meetings is because I need to. I always think of my mind, a bit like one of those radio stations. That if I don't come to meetings, it's not tuned in, and I don't get the frequency. You know, I don't hear the radio station that is NA and that is a program. Instead, all I hear is, or all I hear is like, you know, so. You know, I need to keep coming here to keep this kind of, you know, like, tuned in. You know, what else can I say? I think one of what's the hardest thing I've done in recovery? Okay, not running the London Marathon. Okay, that is not the hardest thing, but I have done that. Not once. Am I an addict? Twice. Okay, that really is insane. And that is completely insane. Okay, that's not the hardest thing. The hardest thing, I think, is being married. Okay, I love my husband. Okay, I love my husband to pieces. Okay, but having an intimate, close relationship with someone is really hard. Okay, being a parent. Okay, that's really hard. Okay, I don't regret it. I don't want to change it, but it's hard work. Okay, you know, it takes a lot of, you know, effort. Anyway, so. Quickly speed through recovery. So anyway, I got my degree and I decided I want to work in what I thought was a relatively interesting profession, and it turned out it was pretty grim. I didn't like it. I'm just trying to think, where was I? That was probably, I don't know, about 8-9 years clean. And that's about when I met my husband. And you know, it's interesting because I met him. We were working on the London Convention Committee together, you know, it had taken me a long time to sort of like come to terms with, you know, a lot of, you know, my father dying, all that kind of fear of abandonment, all those kind of issues, a lot of stuff that had gone on, you know, when I was using, and you know. I was in a place where I was really quite happy and I was really okay with myself and I wasn't looking for anything, okay? And then I met my husband, so it just shows you, see, you never know what's around the corner. I mean, one of the big things for me in recovery, you know, is they say about, you know, you have to, you know, learn to love yourself. I mean, when I got clean, I did not like myself, okay, at all. I felt very ashamed about a lot of the stuff I'd done. And, you know, I think one of the key things for me in recovery is acceptance. I've had to really, you know, there's a saying, my serenity rises and falls with my expectations, okay? Mm-hmm. It really does. And it rises and falls with my level of acceptance. And the more I can accept myself and how I am, okay, the better day I'm going to have. Okay, and if that means accepting the fact that I've messed up over something, or I should have made a phone call, or I should have done something, and it's late, or whatever it is, if I can just accept it, then things will be a lot easier than giving myself a hard time, you know. And I don't need any of you guys to give me a hard time, because I give myself an exceptionally hard time, you know. But all that stuff, you know, I kind of have learned, you know, in the course of recovery. So, you know, today, you know, I still do service. I'm a GSR at a meeting and I go to the ASC, and I went to my first ASC the other month, first one I've done in quite a long time. And it was amazing because in the old days, the ASC used to finish at about 10 o'clock. Now they've got it really organised and it finishes absolutely on the nose. So I still do service and I have sponsees, and you know, I really believe that that kind of level of commitment to NA is what keeps me sane, you know. So being a parent in recovery is really hard, okay. It's back again to that thing, I'm powerless, okay. I'm powerless over people, places and things, okay. And my God, it's painful and hard, okay. It really is. And, you know, I've had to, you know, I didn't come into recovery, I didn't get married and have children with a fantastic manual of functional family life. How to be a parent, how to be a good wife, how to be a good mother, okay? I was absolutely doing it blind. So the only tools that I had, really, is this programme, is this fellowship. And the people in these rooms. So, it's taken a lot of hard work to realise that, you know, I am powerless over my children, okay? I have no control, okay? They're going to do what they're going to do, and they're going to be who they're going to be, okay? And that's, you know, that's quite a big lesson that you have to learn. And I can remember, when they were born, both of them, I was like, you know, it was really quite amazing. I didn't think that I would ever, you know, have something like that. I've just lost my train of thought. So my children in recovery makes me a bit, anyway, moving swiftly on. What happens now? You know, so I'm clean, I go to meetings, you know, how do I work my programme, okay? There's a few key things on honesty, open-mindedness and willingness, okay? That's what I have to work on, because I did not get clean, you know, with this kind of open-minded, gosh, I really want to change myself attitude. So I have to really work on a daily basis. You know, I'm back again talking about, you know, like not being, you know, being powerless over my children. I had to get willing to deal with that, okay? Because I can remember I used to go to meetings and I would share and I'd be tearing my hair out about my 17-year-old daughter and she's doing this and she's doing that, and, you know, and people would say to me, well, you know, Sarah, you're powerless and, you know, have, you know, codependency and all this kind of stuff. And the bottom line was, I wasn't really, it took me a long time to get to that stage where I was really willing to address that and willing to hold up my hands and say, you know what, you're right, okay, I let go, okay. And I find that for me, as an addict, okay, for me as an addict, I have to really... try and remember what I've said, because I can't remember what I was going to say. Anyway, I'm going to wind it up because I've got 5 minutes and I could, now I'm starting to repeat myself, I could waffle on. I want to say that I am immensely grateful to this programme. I would have nothing today if it wasn't for NA. For people who are, you know, coming around or who, you know, think, you know, how the hell does this thing work, you know, it really is a simple programme for complicated people, okay? And it's just put one foot in front of the other and go to a meeting, okay? Open your mouth, okay? Share, be honest, okay? Because I know that there is nothing that I can't share, that somebody out there won't identify with, you know, just give me some kind of, you know, handout and kind of, you know, lifeline and say, this is what you do, you know, and it's such an amazing resource, you know. You know, it really is. I practice these principles in all my affairs. So I'm going to wind up and say that I'm very glad to be here. I'm going to just let go now of what I've said and not kind of fret about it. And just thank you all for being here and keeping me clean. Thanks.